I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right wing to Draymond. Dumped it down to Jackson Davis. Hand off Curry. Double. Jackson Davis to the rack. Look out. Left hand slam for Trace Jackson Davis. Everybody get out of the way.
Bay Area, it's Trace Jackson Davis. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You know what, Dibs? I like your picks.
Yeah, TJD, got another one coming for you.
Until about 5 o'clock.
No, I got a win tonight.
Where do you hear this crap?
I got a lock. Cuckoo. Yeah. I'm ready to get
someone
back to 500? No, I'd still be two below, yeah.
No, whatever. If you win, you'd be 500.
I'd be a game below, I think. No, I'm 11 and 12. Yeah, you're right.
You'd be 500 if you win
My
tonight.
Bad.
But you won't win tonight. Teddy Dimmers. Somebody texted me and said that your sound effect does not sound like the sound effect.
It doesn't matter. It's not. Sometimes it's not about sounding like the sound effect. Sometimes it's about creating your own identity.
Like, I don't think your Farhan sounds like Farhan, but it's still funny.
It's getting better. Unfortunately, it's going
to
be
too late to get better.
Yeah, it's defunct.
You're like, what are you aiming for 2026?
I've worked hard on
Farhan. Like,
because it's a certain
gone.
There's a certain cadence to the chuckle. It's a he followed by two ha's.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Too late.
It's not a ha.
Whatever.
It's a huh.
Yeah. Again, too late.
It's too late.
But unfortunately, like, your Bochy still works because he's still managing.
He's a
champion.
Yeah.
So,
I say he's an idiot.
It's eternal.
He's different. So, you know, we Hall of Fame.
Nothing touches my Andrew Wiggins. That's all I'm going to say.
And
I'll save it for later in the year.
Please.
Because it's a special occasion.
Well, I tell you what. Can we spend a minute on Wiggs?
Let's do it.
Are you excited?
Very.
Did that do some things to people?
I'm starting to tingle.
He scored 20 points.
In a game?
Right.
Wow.
I mean, there weren't actual basketball players defending him.
That's fair.
They're Blazers, but still. I mean, look, all of these things, and this is what we do when we're sports fans, you get small samples in large doses. It's just a long running period of small samples. That's what we get. And we are of the smallest of samples right now. But I do think, outside of everybody's favorite new character, Buddy Buckets, when we started talking yesterday about who are you most interested to see, a lot of the answers were Wiggins and Kuminga. And you get it. Like, if you're a real Warrior fan, you're understanding the intricacies of what they do as a team, what those two individuals do. Can they do it together? Can they not do it together? And the undertones, the backdrop, Andrew and his family and his disappearances, Jonathan and his contract that he's chasing. There's a little mini reality show happening within the Warriors, just with those two players. And the first episode of everyone's favorite mini reality show went to Wiggins.
Right.
Like, decisively.
Yeah, and I said it yesterday that I'm excited about Andrew Wiggins this year, and you said that you weren't going to get excited because it's been too many times, too many years of, you know, you start to get expectations and hopes, and then Andrew just kind of does what Andrew does a lot, which is 4 of 9 from the floor and 12 points and no real impact. But I thought last night was a good step toward the Wiggins that they need. And if Wiggins does that, granted, 8 for 15 is great from a percentage standpoint, but I'm focused more on the 15 mark. He led the team in FGUs, field goal attempts, which is a good thing. That means he's assertive.
Yes.
He's looking to score. He took 7 threes, which is something that Steve Kerr has said. He wants everyone to shoot more threes, maybe not Kevon or TJD, but you get the point. And so he took 7 threes. He took as many threes as the chef, and he made more than the chef.
Yep. Yep.
That for me is a good sign that he's going to be assertive.
Oh, you lost your prize picks, didn't you?
Yes, but I lost. I had already lost an earlier one. I was on the LaMelo Ball points, rebounds, assists, under, and he went off.
LaMelo Ball?
It's threw him in there. It's prize picks.
I get it. I know exactly how
and
it
shout
works.
Shout out Lonzo Ball.
LaMelo Ball. Like that, of
I
all
thought that
the
he
people.
Would have a quiet game. I didn't expect him to go off.
He nearly had a 30-point triple-double.
That's true. So I lost two of my three legs on my prize picks.
That is an epic disaster of a pick.
Well, what's cool is, and I don't want to get too into Guru's live read,
why not?
But they do a special promotion early in season, so it was a $10 thing, and you get your $10 back.
Okay. Oh, okay. So, you
so
got
it
a freebie.
Was a free play. It was a free.
Cash me out one
they
time.
Also have those little,
cash me back one time.
They have those little the teaser individuals where you're just, like Steph over a half a point.
Correct.
Right? They, yeah. You ever throw those in there?
Yeah, I threw in Anthony Edwards last night over a half a point.
And that was the only one you got?
Perhaps. Hashtag fade the dinner. And you know what? And the thing about going, and Steph's was 4.5 threes over under.
Right, and he hit three.
Well, the reason why he hit three is because Portland, you stink. And he didn't have to play anymore. He sat the last 16 minutes of the game.
He had every ability to hit five. He just missed him.
Well, 3 for 7.
It's not bad.
In a normal game, he probably would have gone 5 for 11 or 6 for 14, but he didn't need to play anymore. And that's where
I get it.
When they got up 27, I thought, oh boy. Mm. But I'd already lost the ball once, so whatever.
Let's go to
you win some and you lose the most.
Let's yeah, especially when you're dibbers.
Okay.
Let's go to Gary in Palo Alto. Hi Gary, what are you doing?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Okay, I want to make 2 points. People are just getting way too happy, too early about Buddy Hield. Buddy's great. Don't get me wrong. I think he will be great on the offensive end. But, you know, if you know basketball, his problem is his defense. And when playoff time comes, there's going to be the same people who will talk trash about Buddy that he cannot play defense. Now, I pray that he will change by playing some good, solid defense this season. My second point.
Oh, go ahead, Gary.
Okay,
sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
My final point is just that people just need to stop disrespecting Klay Thompson like that. I know he didn't have two good. The last two seasons wasn't great, but he won four with us.
Can you highlight that? What's the disrespect? Who did it? What'd they say?
The disrespect. Just like what we were saying earlier in the show, people talking about him, the people that were texting him and saying he's not great at, he was hunting the shots and all that, and those are all valid points, but if you look at the bigger picture, don't talk about him like that.
Well, okay, but Gary, if they're valid points, then they're valid points. And that's what I really think there's so much room for compartmentalization here. Gary, thank you. We're all going to compartmentalize this. I love Klay Thompson. I am so grateful for everything he achieved in a Warrior uniform. I had hoped that he would only wear a Warrior uniform. Good goodness, you know this. I don't know if all of our listeners know this. Like, I used to host a radio show with his dad.
Right.
Like, this was personal on some level for me at times. Okay? But, like, I can feel that way and look forward to a statue someday and a Hall of Fame speech and look forward to the night he returns and celebrate all of that. And at the same time, I think I can be sort of, like, glad that he's not on the team anymore because the last 2 years were not a good experience, and they don't lead to good things for Warrior basketball. And I'm a fan of good things for Warrior basketball.
And it's okay to feel a certain way about a legend and then have time pass and remember them for only the good things. And I just, listening to you and the caller had me thinking about Tim Lincecum when he got through 2014, and he wasn't great that year, but they won it all. 2015, he comes back, and he's in and out, and he's hurt, and the rest of it, and he ended up leaving and going to the Angels. And it's like, it would have been cool if he retired here, but he had gotten to a point, not the same behavior and attitude maybe that we saw from Klay, but the overall skills had eroded, and it was time for him to either hang it up or go somewhere else, and he did, and you felt bad seeing him as an Angel, but you also felt kind of good that it was over because it had gotten bad.
I agree. I think the even better comp is Bumgarner.
Yeah.
I really do. If you think about this, this is a champion who will be forever celebrated, but then got to a point where you're like, hey, a little prickly. And then on the way out the door, kind of was like, yeah, I left because I'm kind of mad at the organization, as it turns out. And I needed a fresh start. And in the moment, fans were like, I don't like this. Stupid Farhan, why don't you make him an offer? And then, like, 4 days later, you watched him pitch.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, God, he's done. He's mad, and he's done.
15-42 after he walked out the door.
So, there you go.
With an ERA of 5.23.
He was done. And Clay might be also. Certainly being the player that we knew him to be before, I don't think that that's a stretch at all. If you're mad and you're done, we love you.
Mad done.
Yeah, very good.
Not bad. Had to sneak that in there.
But if you, right? If you're mad and you're done, go.
Yep.
And we'll see you when you come back to wave at us.
In November.
Right. But
Mavericks at Warriors.
But don't play here anymore. If you're mad and you're done, go.
Yeah.
I think he's mad and he's done.
Hopefully he's not really that mad, nor is he done. I'd like to see him.
He's kind of mad.
When I don't know
he's
if
been
he's
mad
done.
For 2 years.
And he starts his Mavericks career in an hour and 15 minutes.
And I think he's less done than Mad Bum was. But he's not going to be what he was. He hasn't been what he was.
Right. And I don't think we thought that Mad Bum was as done as he turned out to be.
We didn't. We didn't think that. But my God, he was. Valvoline Instant Oil Change is your 15-minute drive-through oil change. This is the friendly expert technicians at your local Valvoline Instant Oil Change to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and more. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. Your calls continue to be welcome at 888-957-9570. We're also going to dive back into the 49ers. The quarterbacks, the All-22, how's it looking? Why is Brock different this year? All of that with the great Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner, joins us next on Willard and Dibs.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of the stings that just will never come out. So clean. Downy Rinse and Refresh, it's a dream.
Downy Rinse and Refresh. Fights odor in just one wash. Guaranteed.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're expecting Kurt Warner very, very shortly. 888-957-9570 is the number. We can keep talking Dubs until Kurt is ready to go. This is kind of fun. You know, we played the Buddy Hield thing about, like, I'm just happy and I just do whatever these guys tell me to do because they know what they're doing. Check some of this out, though. The last time he was this open, remember, Buddy's played in the league for a while now for a lot of different teams. Last time he felt this open consistently.
Be honest, you like, I don't want to bring it up, but I think the last time I was free like this was in Oklahoma. I had guys that always playing for me and passing the ball and trying to get me open. So, I mean, it was fun. I don't know the lie, but it's been a fun from preseason. You know, we just got to keep building and stay humble and keep learning from these guys.
Buddy Bucket says he hasn't been this open since college.
Yeah, when everything was on him, all eyes on me. And that's what it was when he was in Oklahoma and he took a bunch of shots. And yeah, if it continues like it did last night going forward, he is averaging 28.5 shots per 36 minutes. That's a lot of shots just through one game.
That's a lot of shots.
That's a lot of shots.
If he's going to make three quarters of them, then fine.
Shoot the ball, yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
And for his career, he doesn't shoot the ball as often as Klay Thompson has in his career.
He does or does not?
Does not. Oh. So as much as we think that Buddy's a super gunner, Yeah, but per 36 minutes, he shoots at a smaller rate than Klay Thompson did. Oh, slightly.
That's crazy.
So there you go.
That's crazy. All right, we're going to get back to the Warriors calls shortly. 888-957-9570. But we're definitely going to take this call. A Hall of Famer is on the River Islands guest line. Let's do it. It's Kurt Warner joining us here on Willard and Dibbs 95.7 The Game. Hey, Kurt, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. I really wonder if you see – do you see anything different this year with Brock Purdy's performances versus what we've seen in the first 2 years?
I would say not a lot different. You know, and I think the hard part is you always got to kind of look at each game individually. I still think Brock has been playing, you know, really good football this year. You know, it hasn't been quite as easy in the past. I felt like this Chiefs game was maybe the worst game that I've seen him play in his career. You know, and again, I don't want to make a huge statement just on the last game, but he's played so well and been so consistent at making the plays that are in front of him and creating some opportunities within this offense. But I thought he really struggled in this game against the Chiefs, just kind of seeing it, you know, recognizing what they were doing, you know, protecting the football, just some different things. Didn't think he played his best game, but you know, overall on the season, maybe not quite as good as the last couple of years, but again, let's put it in context, right? I mean, the way he's been performing over the last couple of years is as good as we've seen anybody perform on a consistent level. And so this year may be a little bit of a down tick from that. You know, and really you just have to look at the whole team. I think the team isn't playing nearly as consistently well this year as they have in the past.
And part of that is no McCaffrey all year, and now Ayuk is gone with a terrible knee injury as well. I wonder, Kurt, if when you watch the Niners, if you aren't seeing defenses come up with a plan against not only Brock Purdy but Shanahan with playing press man and putting a lot more pressure on this offense.
Yeah, I mean, again, it starts with running the football with this offense, as we know. And, you know, they've done that really well at times and not quite as good at other times. But yeah, as I've said, it just hasn't been quite as easy. They haven't had as many, you know, short throws, go for big plays. They haven't had as many big play touchdowns, which to me always makes offense harder. You know, when you have to play 10 and 12 plays without making a mistake, without missing a throw, without having a holding penalty, that's much different than when you make big chunk plays all the time. And what we've seen from this 49ers team and really Brock Purdy over the last couple of years is he's made a lot of big plays every game. And this team and this offense clicks when they make big plays and they can shorten the field, you know, in terms of, you know, plays that they have to make. When you have to go the long distance, most offenses in this league struggle to be able to do that and then put 7 points on the board at the end. And so I don't know if you can pin it on any one thing, but that to me is something that's really stood out, is that they just haven't been getting as many of those chunk plays and big plays. You know, Brandon Ayuk hasn't had many of those. Like, I can't think of very many when Debo's caught the short little quick screen and gone for big plays. You know, even the run game's been good, but we haven't seen as many of those breakout big runs that we were accustomed to a year ago from Christian McCaffrey. So I think that's helped, you know, that's, you know, caused a little bit of the stoppage of the offense, is that they have to be more methodical and more detail oriented, and everybody's got to play, you know, a little bit more on their P's and Q's to make the plays when there is tighter coverage or when those big plays aren't there and when they have to play 10 and 12 plays to put points on the board, and they just haven't been as efficient this year.
Kurt Warner with us on Willard and Dibbs. Kurt, I've been dying to ask you this because you get it. In the age of social media, if you want to be a $60 million quarterback, then there are never any excuses. And if your team has injuries, you still need to be amazing. So I wanted to ask you this. If you went into a football game and there was no Marshall Faulk and there was no Isaac Bruce and there was no Torrey Holt, how do you think it would affect your performance?
I mean, I'd probably come down with some kind of arm injury or something. you know, I mean, it's always going to affect your performance. And again, a lot of it really depends on, you know, I always looked at it like, if a team was going to play me in zone coverage, then I didn't care who was out there. You know, if they were playing zone coverage, then it would fall on me to make the right decision, throw it to the guy, and of course they got to make the plays on the other end. But it's being the right place when you're supposed to be there. And I think there's a lot of guys that you can get to do that. And so you feel like you can still play at a high level when that's the case. If a team's going to come out against you and challenge you physically, in terms of like play man to man, and can your guys separate, then to me it would fall to two things. A, you know, can my guys win in those situations? It's probably going to be a little bit more of a struggle than it is with Isaac and Torrey and Marshall and Larry Fitzgerald and those guys. But then you have to create more for those guys. You've got to get into some stacks and bunches and put them in situations where they're not going to get pressed. And, you know, you can create some more space for them instead of expecting them to play, the same way your other guys would play. And so I always felt like we would be successful, but how we had to be successful may have to change from a schematic standpoint, just to play and cater to what our guys are good at or what they're not good at or what we're going to be facing that week versus when you have those guys, you don't really care. Like, you play us however you want. We're going to win against man. We're going to win against zone. We're going to play our scheme because it doesn't really matter. Well, you know, when you have lesser players, so to speak, now you have to be a little bit more creative in how you get them open or what you do or how you force a defense to play against you than you may have to with all that talent.
That's an interesting way to break it down, because we're starting to see defenses come up and pressure this team a little bit more with, like you're talking about, with man-to-man coverage. And I wonder how much the new movement of defenses toward the two-deep zone makes it tougher on offenses, because it seems like the big plays in the passing game are harder to come by now.
That's a myth. I don't buy into it. Here's the thing that is funny about that is that you say that, okay, the bigger plays are harder to come by because there's two deep safeties. Well, when you think about it, the base coverages you're going to see are two deep, three deep, or four deep, right? And so why would it be harder to get big plays down the field against two guys covering the entire back end of the field versus three or versus four? So that to me is a myth. It's more what I would say is the chunk throws might be a little bit harder. And by that I mean kind of the 15 to 25 yard throws are a little harder, not the big plays down the field. And why that's harder is because you have five guys playing zone underneath in cover two. And so the windows are smaller, you know, in that second level, or you're always going to be throwing it over a guy in the second level because of the underneath defenders, not because of the deep defenders. If you can protect, there's only two guys on the back end of the field. Like, I can exploit that all day long if you give me the time. And so that's, I think, the myth that's going on out there. But yeah, you know, you have to be a little more precise on those chunk second level throws when you're playing against cover two, because you're going to have to throw it over a guy. You're going to have to layer it. You know, the windows are going to be a little bit tighter, when that's the case. But that to me is the biggest thing about it. More so than you can't get the big plays down the field, it's, you know, the consistency of the chunk plays there. You better be really good. Like when I played back with Rams, we saw cover two all the time. You know, like we saw teams that wanted to jam our guys at the line of scrimmage. That's another thing that can factor in, right? You've got corners that are up at the line of scrimmage that can jam your receivers to slow them down the field. So you got to be a little more creative in getting your guys. But we saw a whole bunch of cover two, and we were good at getting big plays, but I think it's because we were so detail-oriented, and I had the capacity to kind of layer throws over the top and could be accurate with that second-level throw. And that's probably the biggest difference is there may not be the precision at the quarterback spot that we've seen in the past. And so without that precision, those chunk throws are going to be harder to come by, not the deep throws. So just to kind of clear that up, that, hey, it's harder to get big plays, you know, against cover two, I don't agree with that. But it might be harder to get, you know, those second-level 25-yard throws on a consistent basis because of the precision of quarterbacks and offenses right now.
Kurt, I have a reason, a specific reason for asking this, which I'll reveal in a moment. But as a quarterback, if you could have basically a great teammate at a specific position to help you do what you do, what would that position be? Or if you want to put it on the other side of the ball on defense, you could do that too.
So again, what position would I want to have, or what kind of player would I want to have to make my job easier?
Exactly. Like where would you want like a great teammate or great teammates at what other position to make your job go well?
You know, I mean, first of all, like I was fortunate to play with Marshall Faulk. And so I think a good versatile running back, you know, can be a real mismatch and can really help you dictate things if they can get out of the backfield and catch the ball, kind of like Christian does, right? He's kind of a positionless player that you can put a lot of different places. And I think those guys are so, you know, good and important. You know, a Deebo Samuel would be another type guy that you would love to have. I still think the biggest mismatches in football are the tight ends. If you have a really, really good tight end, they're really tough to match up with. If they can play, you know, play in the run game like George can, play in the pass game, get down the field, make big plays, because they're being covered by those interior guys that have to worry so much about the run game and so much about coming downhill. And so if you have a good player there, I think that's, you know, those are kind of two areas where you can create really, really good mismatches for yourself. Unlike outside, of course, I played with great receivers and I'm not trading them for anybody, but you know, the best defensive athletes are going to be out there too. So the discrepancy in, you know, ability is going to be smaller in those areas than I think it is a linebacker covering a really good, you know, receiving back, or a linebacker or a safety covering a really good receiving tight end, where those guys can be involved in more parts of the game. I think those would be the areas that I would definitely look to.
Okay, so here's why I'm asking, because you kind of got to receiver there at the end. And as a quarterback, I think that's kind of where our brains go. But, Kurt, I'm amazed at what's happening at this position around the league and the way that it's being paid. A lot of teams, it's their second highest paid player behind the quarterback. Hell, sometimes it's the second and the third highest paid guy, kind of like the Miami Dolphins. Does this make sense to you, the amount of resources that are being put toward wide receivers?
You know, that's a tough one, because it is a throw first league, or it has been really until this year. You know, I've seen that kind of trend change a little bit. And so you have to have a difference maker at that position, right? Like, you know, there's very few really good teams without a difference maker at that position. And if they don't have the difference maker at that position, then you better be really good in other areas. So I understand why those guys are getting paid, and especially the top guys in the league are getting paid, you know, because of the nature of the way it's going. And then I think you look at other spots. Like, you know, I think resources need to go to the offensive line. You know, I think the teams that are really good in this league, that's another thing you start to see, is offensive line becomes so important to those really good teams. And building there, I think, you know, that's vital. But I understand why at the wide receiver spot. Because, again, you can look around the league at teams that, you know, I think about the Dallas Cowboys. You know, they got CeeDee Lamb, who's a really good wide receiver. They don't have much outside of that. So they're not running the football very well, and so it becomes a premium to have multiple guys on the outside that can be really good, that can win for you, that can be game changers for you. If you're really good in the other areas up front, then maybe that's not the case. But I just think, because of the rules and the way it's all dictated, wide receiver is an important position. You got to have them for most teams, kind of like the quarterback. So I understand the resources. You know, I just think the problem is, and even at the quarterback position, is that we've gotten to the point where all we do is, you know, we just slate guys in. Oh, he's the next guy up. We're going to pay him this exorbitant amount of money. And the difference is, you need to pay guys that are worth that kind of money. And we need to somehow get away from having to pay everybody that kind of money, because that, to me, is, I think, where the discrepancy is. And I look at it more from a quarterback lens now. But we've got all these guys making $200 million in the league that probably don't deserve to be making that. They're not good enough to be considered in that category, to hamstring an organization, to be expected to carry a team. They're not there, yet they're getting paid that. And, you know, and I think we start to do that at every position where we start to overpay good players instead of reserving that money and that commitment for great players.
It's the whole idea of resetting the market, and Dallas has a couple of guys who have done that, and I want to get your thoughts on Dak Prescott and just where you see Dallas right now coming off a bye and a team at 3-3 that feels like they've been playing worse than that. What do you make of Dak Prescott and this Dallas offense coming into Levi's on Sunday?
I don't think they're very good right now. I don't think there's anything that they do really well. You know, and that becomes a huge part of it, is that not every team can do everything. But if you want to compete in this league, you better be really good at something if that's the case. And Dallas isn't really good at anything. Dak's not playing really good right now. You know, their pass game isn't very good right now. Their run game is awful right now. You know, they're not playing great at the offensive line. Like, there is no area or no player on their team right now that I say is really good, is one of the top, you know, situations or top areas offensively in the league. And so, you know, then you put a bunch of average together, and you probably get below average. And then they're having their struggles on defense without being able to stop the run and some of those things. So I see a team that's very, very average across the board. And I don't know how they get out of it. I don't know where all of a sudden this change comes from, because to me, if you don't have a dominant area on your offense, you better be really, really good at the details. Like, the little things must be the, you know, the most important thing for you, because you're not just going to out-athlete people. You're not just going to beat them because, you know, you're better than them at the offensive line. So you better be really good from a technique standpoint, a detail standpoint, a creative standpoint offensively. And I just don't see this team being that either. I look at their film and I say, man, there's so many things I would do different in the passing game. So many details that aren't, you know, buttoned up that cost them. So when you put it all together, to me, they're just not a very good football team right now. And I don't see how they work their way out of it.
Kurt Warner with us here on Willard and Dibs. Kurt, you won't remember this, but last season you came on this show and we talked about Kyle Shanahan's system and how it's not really built to come from behind. That the whole idea is to get a lead early and then hold it. And they do that very well. But obviously it hasn't worked as well this year. And there's a lot of talk with this fan base with regard to Kyle's inability to have the right offense in place when there's chaos or when you fall behind. Is this a flaw in the system, in your opinion?
You know, I think that's really hard to use that term. The way I always look at it, and I do remember our conversation, and I believe in that part of the conversation, I also said, here's the thing about every team, is that every team has to focus and try to become great at something. And in doing that, something else is always going to be sacrificed because of it. If you want to be a great running team and commit more time to the run game, your pass game isn't going to be as good. Or you're going to say, I'm really good in the run game. Now I'm going to be really good with play action, a.k.a., you know, the 49ers, a.k.a. the Lions. Those teams are really good at that. They're not as good in the drop back game. And I think it's because they sacrifice some because of what their system is and how their system is built and how they expect to play most of the time. It doesn't mean they neglect, you know, when they have to play drop back football. It's just not their forte. It's just not what they work on and what they, you know, what they hone in on every week. That's going to be more limited, and the other things are going to be, you know, the more important part of it or the more extensive part of what they practice and what they plan to do, because that's what they expect to be good at and that's what they expect to win with most times out. And so when you say a flaw, I mean, yeah, I don't think they're as good in those areas. You know, I'm not as big a fan of of the complexity of their pass game and how they like to run it when they're playing drop back and spread out football. I love, you know, a lot of what they do in the run game and how their play action comes off of it. And so, you know, but I think you can look at a lot of teams. You know, I was on a lot of teams that were really good at throwing the football, and we weren't great at running the football. Like, that wasn't what we were great at. We didn't think that was necessarily our strength. You know, we could suffice. We could, you know, we could run the ball at times. We could have good games running the ball, but it wasn't what we were great at. And it was, you know, because we chose based on our personnel or based on the scheme that we thought we could have success with, hey, we're going to be a 3-4 wide receiver team. That's how we're going to win. That's the strength of our team. Let's be great at that. And then let's hope we're good enough at the others that when we have to do them, you know, we can be functional and we can be good enough to win. And so I don't know if it's a flaw, because I don't know how many teams are out there that are good at everything, you know, that are great in every facet. So it's like, hey, pick your poison. What do we want to do today? What's the dictate? Oh, we got to come from behind. No problem. We're great at that. Oh, we're up, you know, we're up by 10, so we're going to have to pound the football and run it. Oh, we're great at that. Like, there's not many teams that are good like that. And so it's figuring out what your team is or what your scheme is, or building your team around your scheme and saying, this is how we're going to win most of the time. And then when we get into those two or three games where we have to do it a different way, let's hope we have the personnel. Let's hope we're good enough in that facet to get it done, maybe one, maybe two of those three times. But we know that's probably not where we're going to hang our hat. And we're going to understand that going in and hope we don't play in a majority of our games that play against our strength.
I think that's a phenomenal answer. Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Kurt, it's always great to have you. Thank you so, so much.
You got it. Good to talk to you guys.
Okay, there he is, the Hall of Famer Kurt Warner. I think we'd like to react to that. You also threw out an interesting question about the Cowboy-Niner game earlier today that we can toss around, 888-957-9570, in terms of who needs this game more between the 49ers and the Cowboys. I'd like to get into that a little bit. Oh, and there is developing news on the injury report from Kyle Shanahan that you need to know. So we'll do all of that coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
I don't think they're very good right now. I don't think there's anything that they do really well, you know, and that becomes a huge part of it, is that not every team can do everything. But if you want to compete in this league, you better be really good at something if that's the case. And Dallas isn't really good at anything.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
That was funny. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. That's where Kurt Warner just was. And isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. Kyle Shanahan has publicly used the word doubtful for Juwan Jennings. Doubtful.
On a Thursday.
Let me translate.
He ain't playing.
You're going to see Juwan Jennings after the bye. Hell, you hope you see Juwan Jennings after the bye.
Although, and you wrote on Debo in his status today.
I don't know that you need much of a word. Debo was a full participant and dancing for much of practice.
Today. Okay.
So
the update. Full participant.
Yes, and George Kittle too.
And dancing.
Yeah, I don't know about the dancing, but he was running.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah, so I'm running.
I have no concern about George Kittle and his foot.
I think you are safe to assume that we will probably see Debo Samuel coming up this weekend. So, and Jordan Mason was a participant as well. So you're looking at an offense that we'll have Debo, we'll have George, we'll have Jordan. Ricky Pearsall now, you got to have a role now. Because obviously there's no Juwan, there's no Brandon. But here's what I think is really key and really something that I'll look for Sunday night. And maybe we can all do this. I think there's a very big difference between Brandon and Juwan, for example, are missing a game, and you know about that at the beginning of the week, versus what happened to the 49ers last week, which is that they thought they had Debo and they thought they had Brandon, and then when that game developed, at least when they got back into it and it was 14-12, once that happened, they didn't have those players anymore. And you have a game plan that is already in place based on certain weapons who are now no longer available. That, I don't know who's going to get hurt in this game, but in theory, that's not what Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing and Ronnie Bell, this time, they're going into the game knowing that they're going to potentially have more featured roles. And I think it's easier to assess Kyle Shanahan and play calling and either criticize or compliment based on what happens because there's a game plan going around those players. That, to me, is very, very key.
Definitely. And you have an idea of what you are going to put in, what you're going to install for those guys, especially when it comes to Deebo Samuel, because the Deebo package of plays is different than any other player. And so when you find out the night before that he's a maybe, and then the morning of that he is a no, well, then that takes about probably at least 10 plays off your beloved laminated play sheet that you're just not going to run. All of the jet sweep potential, all of the Deebo as a wide back, that goes off. Even some of the quick hitters where you're just going to throw it to him and he's going to step behind the line of scrimmage and he gets a quick pass and he's going to try to yak it up down the sideline. Those plays probably come off the board as well. So going in, you know it's going to be Pearsall and Deebo. And from then you're going to have maybe a little Cowing and you know, you're probably going to use Juszczyk a little bit more, I would hope, in the past game. So you can scheme it up knowing what you have going in. I do think that that's a big deal.
Yeah, and you're going against a team where you've got matchup wins all over the place. That's the other injury news. Micah Parsons looks like he's not going to be ready. I just don't know. Like, I'm with Kurt, and I'm not Kurt Warner, so I can say this with a little bit more oomph. I don't know what the hell the Cowboys have to offer in going against a decent team. I know that they can beat the New York Giants. That's fun. Good for you. But the Cowboys, and it doesn't mean, again, it's the NFL, so bippity-bop and the ball can bounce and you can mess up and do things on special teams. They've already played a couple of teams this year that don't have a whole lot to offer on film, and they've lost those games. So I understand that, but the Cowboys stink. Like, they really, truly, and I don't mean this in, like, a Niner fan sort of, like, trash talk way. They have very little to offer in terms of matchups on film. They have CeeDee Lamb. He is a very good wide receiver. End of conversation right now. They really, like, they don't have a run game. They don't have an offensive line. They don't have a pass rush. They have a pass rush, but they're out. They're not healthy. The 49ers, on this one, you really can lean into it. I don't care who the personnel is for the Niners in terms of weaponry on offense, unless everybody who's supposed to be in there gets hurt in the game. But even if it's the Niners should absolutely win this football game.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there are three phases. So, and Dallas is coming off a bye, which is a definite big advantage. I agree with you talent-wise. And the thing that has really hurt the Niners this year defensively has been the ground game, running backs, yep, especially in the second half. James Conner, Kyren Williams, last week, Kareem Hunt. Dallas is averaging 3.5 a carry, 32nd in the National Football
League.
And their offensive line doesn't create holes, and their running back, is it Dowdle, I think?
Rico Dowdle.
Yeah, good little player. But
Zeke comes in for some old man strength every now and again. They're awful.
They can't run the ball. Yeah. And the passing attack, they're already down another tight end, and you've got CeeDee Lamb, who can do a lot, but you would hope that the 49ers are just going to bracket him across the field and make somebody else come out there and beat you. I think it's the backup tight end who's going to be out.
No, you scared me because I got Jake Ferguson.
Ferguson's in
one of the fantasy
leagues. The backup,
leagues,
yeah. I believe, is going to be out.
Got it.
You know, you don't have a lot of help for CeeDee Lamb in the pass game, and your offensive line's been suspect. So, yes, this should be a game where the Niners' D can feast, but the biggest concern, and it's a concern every week, but it's even bigger this week, is the special teams gap between these two teams is profound.
It's fair.
So if the Niners are going to lose this game, it would be via the special teams. Dallas has an elite punter. The Niners are, I think, 30th in net punting yards themselves. The Niners are on their third kicker, and Dallas has the best kicker in football, and Dallas has a very good kickoff returner who will take it 8 yards deep and look to hit you for a big one. So that, for me, is going to be the biggest hold-your-breath time in this Sunday night game.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair. That phase of the game, the Cowboys are much better than the Niners so far. All right, I have a little pet project that I want to run by you.
All right.
So first, how would you answer your own question? Who needs this football game more this weekend?
I think the Dallas needs it more. If the 49ers were to lose, and I always think about it in the negative, like the what if.
Yeah,
if
sure.
If the 49ers lose and Seattle beats Buffalo, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but let's just play the worst case scenario. They're allowed to beat Buffalo.
It's in Seattle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's a maybe.
It's a maybe, but if that happens, then you would be two games behind Seattle, and you have the tiebreaker over Seattle, but when you do play Seattle, they're going to be coming off their bye. So for me, the Seattle game looms as more difficult than the first one, but at 3-5, you're still not out of it by any stretch in the West. If Dallas were to lose, and they fall to 3-4, I do think that they start to look up at Washington, who's coming back to earth. They got a quarterback injury. Hopefully he's going to be better this Sunday.
Yeah, he did not practice again.
Philadelphia is a team that maybe isn't as good as we're used to, but they don't have a first-place schedule, and they look like they're going to be a 10-win team by hook or by crook. So for me, and you're Dallas coming off a bye, and you lose this one, I think Dallas is in a worse spot than if the Niners lose and fall to 3-5.
It feels pretty similar to me. Like, I think we're splitting hairs a little bit. I think they both really, really need the game. And so here's my pet project. I just want to run this by you. Don't get mad, Dibs.
You can say it, but it'll ruin your credibility a little
bit. I'm not going to say it. I'm not. I'm going to ask you a question. Are you open to hearing the phrase must win and not taking it in a sort of like black and white mathematical term?
Am I open to it?
Yes.
I mean, sure.
Like, you hate the term so much.
I don't hate the term. I hate the misuse of the term.
Well, but I know, see, and that's what I'm asking you about. Because I know what you mean by must win, and I know how Kyle Shanahan answered this last week. And obviously, until you're eliminated, nothing is a must win. However, from an emotional standpoint, from a likelihood standpoint, is your season going to go to a good place if you lose this game? I'd argue probably not.
That's surprising to hear.
It does not mean must. It does not mean you're out of it. It's not surprising to hear. Their schedule, you've detailed this,
right,
in the second half of the year, is a minefield filled with teams who are good and you're on the road and they are more rested.
But you've been 3-5 before and you've made it to the NFC Championship game. All I hear.
And that year's not this year. And that year also, you came down to 3 minutes left to go in a game and you almost missed the playoffs.
That was a must win.
Yes. And it was razor thin. So, yes, it doesn't mean if they lose this game that they can't win the division. But I would argue if they lose this game, the likelihood of their season being a bad one goes way up. It's really high. This is a crappy football team. This would be yet another. This would be a Rams or a Cardinals, if you ask me, if you go lose this football game. And the likelihood of having a good season is really bad if you lose. So, no.
See, I disagree with that part of it.
Okay, and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. But if I feel that way, can I borrow must win and you understand that I don't mean that in a mathematical way? Sure, they're still alive if they lose. But damn, I think they've got to have this game.
That's a big game, sure. And it's bigger than the Kansas City game. And I said it before the Kansas City game because this is a conference game. And if you lose a conference game, the tiebreaker when it comes to the wild card is head-to-head, and then it's conference record. So if your conference record stinks, then you're not going to win tiebreakers if it comes down to a wild card situation. So to that extent, yes, it's a big game. I don't think it's a must win because your division, no one's going to run away with this division. I don't believe it. I don't think that anyone's going to win 11. So if you go to 3-5 and you still have the Rams, Arizona, and Seattle remaining, and you do, Those are games that you should win. Those are all should wins. You're favored in every game, for God's sakes.
Well, I don't even know if that's true anymore. And by the way, if you are saying that if you lose this game, you still need to get to 10 wins, you're assuming that it's like sort of likely that the Niners can go 7-2 down the stretch with road trips to Green Bay, Buffalo, Detroit is coming to town.
Yeah.
Like, my God, you even said the rest advantage for Seattle. Like, it's going to be hard. And to think that what we're looking at right now, even if Christian comes back, that you can snap your fingers and believe that 7-2 is, sure, it's possible, but is it likely? I'd argue no. I would argue no, and that's why I wonder if you would, you know, kind of allow for the idea that you're right mathematically, it's not a must win, but I kind of think they must win.
Yeah, you can think that.
They really must win this game.
Right, and I don't believe that would be the words that I would choose, but you get to choose whatever words you want.
I didn't want to upset you.
It doesn't upset me.
Well, I don't want you to get all sent off into some sort of emotional tailspin.
I'm going to pretend that I'm Tom and Ellen right now.
Oh.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Okay.
I'm not mad at you for using that word.
I don't know that they've ever said that to me.
Even when you threw a party and you hid in your room and called the cops on your own party?
I don't think they know about that. Are you listening, Mom?
Go ahead and dump that, Grandy. Only happened, 38 years ago or something.
I will tell you, I don't even remember if this is the same night, because it's not like I only threw one party, but I think what
happened... It's like that time when your friend came and drove and parked on the lawn, and your dad came out.
And then he was mad. But yeah. He had a right to be mad on that one. Yeah, I just wanted to deal with it myself. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, I'll deal with my stupid friend. Don't have you come deal with the stupid friend, because then it's going to get all over school the next day, and now I'm in trouble, right? But what happened with the party where I called the cops on myself, Mom, did I clean that house?
Yeah. I love this story.
I cleaned that house.
Except?
I was ready.
Would you forget the
look? I was ready to execute the lie.
Mm.
Hey, Mom and Dad, how was your weekend? Because I was just sitting here staring at the wall for the last 2 days. I didn't do anything. In fact, I guarded the house. I never even left it. I just guarded it so nobody would look at it. That was my story.
Until?
And Mom went, okay, place looks great. And then she went to cook dinner that night.
Yeah.
And she opened up the oven, and someone had shoved a Budweiser 24-pack.
Oh,
without the beer anymore, just the packaging.
Of course.
In the oven.
One case.
Inside
your oven. Man.
Like, where do you think the what are you doing phrase came from?
Totally.
It was born that day.
Mark.
What are you doing?
Mark.
How does that help anyone? It doesn't help you.
No.
Whoever you are who put it in there. So luckily, my mom is the type of person who, when she opened it up, she just started cracking up. She just started laughing her A off. And then she's like, we'll talk later.
I think I know who did it. Asha Shana.
It's Asha Sharma.
Whatever. It worked yesterday. Do the legal. Oh, time for the legal.
Time for the legal. I didn't do the legal yet?
No, it was a four-minute oven story.
Time for the legal.
Yes. Anyway.
Listen to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube. Powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.